Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today. Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Peace of mind begins with a life insurance you can trust. Visit Zurich.ie to find out more.
Drive Time with Katie Hannan and Cullum O'Mungoyne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a lot happened this week. We had Zelensky's historic visit. We had a fresh government push on infrastructure. They figured out how to do it now. And Irish shoppers flashing the 50-euro notes. And, of course, we had the big Eurovision withdrawal yesterday. Joining me now to break it all down is Saoirse Hanley, journalist at the Irish Independent, and Harry McGee, political correspondent with the Irish Times. So, back to that historic visit on Tuesday from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, where he delivered an address to the Oireachtas. Let's just take a quick listen to that.
This has gone on far too long to simply close our eyes and turn the page on Russia. History has seen this before, and this time it must be different. We need real peace. Help us achieve it and never lose your faith in Ukraine. Thank you. Thank you, Ireland. Glory to Ukraine. Thank you.
Yeah, so that was Volodymyr Zelensky addressing the Oireachtas. The scenes in the Oireachtas as he was being ushered in, we were watching it here on the screen. The excitement in the Dáil Chamber, Harry.
Yeah, I mean, these events are always massive events. World leaders addressing a joint sitting of the Oireachtas, the Dáil and the Seanad. And he's an esteemed company. Bill Clinton, Nelson Mandela, John F. Kennedy, Joe Biden, Tony Blair, Hermit Kohl, Francois Mitterrand are amongst those who have addressed both chambers over the years. So it is a very special occasion. And he had already done it, but he did it by video link 3 years ago, a few months after, just about a month after the war had broken out. But this time it was different. He was present. And I think it was a very significant moment. And I think it realigned the relationship between Ireland and Ukraine. The war has been going for 3 years. I think there is a little bit of, just in terms of sentiment, a little bit of fatigue had begun to go in. The Ukraine war was eclipsed a little bit by Gaza, and we shouldn't be making comparison between two horrible situations. But Gaza did command a lot of attention for a long time. And then the Ukrainian refugees who came to Ireland, there was huge empathy for them at the start, and it's still there. But I think it had petered out a little bit because it got mixed up with the whole question of immigration and accommodation and housing. So I think his presence here, I think it did a lot to kind of re-establish that link and that presence. And it wasn't a remarkable speech. I don't think he said anything new. He came here in 2017, and I think perhaps he gave a better performance in 2017. It was during his pre-political days. He was appearing with the comedy troupe in Drogheda. But he had a lot of substance to say during the 13 minutes. And what I took from it was the seriousness of his intent, but also a slight note of pessimism in relation to any solution or any ceasefire happening in the immediate future, despite the fact that negotiations are ongoing at present.
Yeah, I mean, there was a sense that a lot of what he was saying was directed over the heads of the chamber and the Irish people even and to what was happening in Moscow.
Yeah, sure.
And there, he did have the sense of a guy who was under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, well,
and rightly.
When he was talking, I mean, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner were meeting Vladimir Putin and Sergei Lavrov and their Russian acolytes at the same time. And Vladimir Putin was holding a press conference, coming out with very bellicose stuff, saying that if Europe wants a war, we will fight a war with Europe. And he is under intense pressure because the Americans have absolutely ignored Europe. I was reading in Le Monde today, they were saying that Europe has been humiliated by the States. They were meant to hold, Witkoff and Kushner were meant to come back and have talks in Brussels on the way back from Russia, but they bypassed that and they've essentially summoned the Ukrainians to America.
Yeah.
And it seems that the 28-point plan that was agreed between America and Russia has now been whittled down to a 27-point plan, but still very favourable towards Russia.
All right. Saoirse, whatever about the global audience, there was also some things addressed to the Irish audience. Katie, how many gratitudes and thank yous did you count out?
I counted 10.
10, okay. There was that, and then the ambition for Ukrainians to return home to a peaceful Ukraine. Those definitely aimed at an Irish audience.
Yeah, definitely, because as you know, as we're saying there, there is kind of, I think a couple of years ago there was much more of a welcoming sentiment for a lot of the Ukrainian refugees that were here. Because they had to be. And I think that the numbers at the beginning of this year were over 110,000 people from Ukraine had been here in the last few years. Many had moved on elsewhere, but a lot are still in our communities. I mean, I remember staying in a hotel a couple of years ago and someone, I was talking to the manager there and she was saying that one of the entire floors of the hotel, there was Ukrainian refugees living there. So much so, a lot of them were working there. There had been a baby who had come along and was born there, and they were very much integrated into the quite small community that was there, just kind of near the Boyne up in Meath. But I do think that I think a lot of Irish people have very much welcomed Ukrainian people into their communities, made that very apparent. And I think hiring a thanks for that and for the support indeed that's been sent over from a monetary perspective, I think that's always nice to hear, because I was actually quite surprised that he hadn't visited, because in my mind he had, but I think it must have been the video link that I was remembering from a few years ago. So definitely I think hearing a lot of those, you know, they're easy thanks to give, but still nice to hear them.
We also, the two people who weren't applauding, there was a great warm welcome in the Oireachtas for him, but two people who stood but didn't applaud were the people before Profit TDs. And Richard Boyd Barrett was on with us. Colm, you were talking to him. Mm. And you asked him about why they didn't applaud after Zelensky's speech.
We stood out of respect for the Ukrainian people and we attended. But we have always, and we remain very consistent in this, opposed the idea that military escalation or alignment with NATO was going to improve the situation.
Right, yes, sure. There was a line, as President Zelensky arrived into Leinster House, there was a line of political leaders and representatives of independence there. But as Richard Boyd Barrett told us there, he wasn't in that line. They chose not to engage in the major part of the welcome.
And it's points that he very much reiterated in talking to you, you know, on the show after that, that it's, I think it's one thing, you know, to just kind of idly clap or, you know, it doesn't really send much of a message. But the absence of that applause is very much a message. And it's one that, you know, he and his party are very much sticking by. I think it jars a little bit sometimes with the kind of Irish welcome we're renowned for giving. And I think a lot of the public felt that way. Certainly in a lot of the comments about the video from that clip, even from the show, a lot of people seem to feel that it just wasn't, I suppose, what they expected or wanted to be happening. But certainly it wasn't a welcome that he was giving. And it's interesting that his point there is that, you know, he stood out of respect for the Ukrainian people, but that his applause certainly was not directed at Zelensky himself. So it was a very interesting interaction, I thought, and certainly one that he's not backing down on.
Although, Harry, I noticed at the beginning you said, you know, Gaza and Ukraine, you know, while one supplanted the other in the news, they shouldn't be compared. But for Richard Boyd Barrett, he said, you know, they should be compared. There's a clear difference in how people have given full-throated support to Ukrainian resistance and provided arms and provided logistical support and everything else, and a clearly different approach when it comes to Palestinians.
Yeah, but his argument was that the Ukrainians shouldn't have been armed. And that, I mean, that's futile and it's ludicrous. Mm. You know, because it's almost like King Canute telling the waves to stop coming in. You know, I mean, the Russians weren't going to stop the tanks. They weren't going to stop taking territory. And only for the resistance of Ukraine. And yes, they were armed by Europe and they were armed by NATO and they were armed for a while by the States. But otherwise, Russia would have overrun the Ukraine in a matter of days. And the argument in relation...
He might argue, though, I'm not him, but he might argue that it should never have been let to get to that point where, you know, there a war ultimately broke out, that other avenues relations should have been pursued before that.
But what happened in Ukraine, I mean, what happened in Gaza would have happened in Ukraine. A superior military force would have overrun and would have slaughtered hundreds of thousands of the population.
Okay. I feel we have very thoroughly addressed this issue twice now in the studio this week. We'll move on to the Accelerating Infrastructure Action Plan. So this is a new suite of measures, 30-point plan, action plan, which was came out of this task force and launched by Jack Chambers this week. Let's just listen to Roderick O'Gorman, the Green Party leader, speaking with us on this.
Giving deeper the leadership role, giving the Department of Public Expenditure the leadership role there, I laughed a little bit when I read that, because the one thing that DEEPR is really good at is telling ministers, no, don't spend money, don't go ahead with that project. And look, that's their job. DEEPR are a check on the public purse. But sometimes, in my experience, again, at Cabinet, there was this idea of being kind of penny wise and pound foolish, denying the early investment in infrastructure and facilities, but then that actually costing the state money long term.
Now, Saoirse, this is like, okay, we've got it now. We understand what the blockages are, and we're going to push through and get rid of all the red tape and all the bureaucracy, and we're going to deal with the judicial reviews. So, all good news then.
Well, you'd hope so on paper, certainly. But I think, you know, if you are aware of any level of, you know, the kind of things that have to be in place for infrastructure to change. My boyfriend used to be a councillor for Fingal, and the amount of times I'd be talking to him about, you know, the aftermath of a development plan meeting or a regular weekly council meeting or whatever it might be, the amount of change and progress and movement for all of the various, you know, prongs of infrastructure, whether it's housing or transport or any of those things, the amount that was caught up in that bureaucracy and that red tape sounded infuriating from a third party perspective, let alone from those who are implementing it. So I do think, you know, anything that they can do to accelerate those things absolutely is a welcome change. But you do wonder how much of that then gets caught up in you know, I think it's maybe not as straightforward a path as the plan lays it out to be. I know there's a, you know, approximately 30 changes they want to make. All of these things they're hoping to bypass or able to otherwise tweak to be able to make these things happen. But I think whether we see them or not immediately, I still am quite sceptical of. I think I've certainly taken an approach lately of, you know, the various changes we'd love to see. Like last time I was on the show, we spoke about, you know, Dublin Bus and not being able to tap your phone when you get on the bus. I've just accepted that'll come when it comes. So I think there's a little bit of certainly a cynicism, I think, with a lot of the public about whether or not these things will work. But I would welcome them if they do. But I think there's also then the other question of, well, where is the line there of what can you kind of shortcut or circumvent? What are the changes that you can make without all of the various red tape that's involved? I don't really know. I don't envy anyone whose job it is to do it.
Harry, it was announced today that the Dublin Drainage Project is finally going to go ahead, and the procurement will commence next year. That's been the one that's held up as the example of everything that's wrong with Irish infrastructure planning. But, you know, some people who've been involved in the judicial review would argue that the judicial review aspect of that was actually responsible for very little of the delay. It was other inefficiencies in the system that delayed it for years.
And I think there's validity in that argument, Colm, but there's no doubt that JR contributed to it, and it has contributed to a lot of the delays, but people have focused inordinately on judicial review. But there are other aspects as well. Like, for example, the regulatory burden is just incredible. There was a report on competitivity that was published in March, and they're talking about some of the bigger infrastructure projects require 30,000 pages of documentation when the submission is made. You know, it's not like when they went and just built a hydroelectric electricity station back in the 1930s, brought in Siemens and did it without worrying too much about the regulations, just got the thing done.
But I mean, planning permission wasn't a thing back in those days.
There's planning permission, but there's we were talking about the tap and go and bus. The technical solutions are far more complicated now. When people are talking, for example, about the National Children's Hospital, it's not just a building. It's like it's like an aeroplane. It's got so much complicated systems and IT, and so there are so many components nowadays. But the problem is that in Ireland it takes so much longer than other European countries, which have the same burdens in terms of regulation. We just seem to have a problem in making decisions and implementing decisions, and taking much longer than everybody else. Okay. I think the report is good, and I think if the report is implemented in full, I think it will make a difference for JR and for all the other aspects.
Okay, very, very quickly, because we're nearly out of time. We were also asking the question this week, why does €50 feel like the new €20 when you're out shopping?
I think shopping for anything. I think, you know, I've actually had a conversation with friends of mine recently because my younger sister is a good 10 years younger and she's in college now. And we were debating about how when I was younger, €20 on a night out could get you very far and you could have enough for, you know, a takeaway at the end of the night.
Too far
home.
Even.
Too far. A lot would argue. Anyone who knew me then will argue the same. But for my sister, that's a complete impossibility. It's at least €50, if not more, for just a regular night out. That's without considering anybody going to do their groceries, even the cost of a coffee. I remember being charged for something for a flat white a few years ago and thinking it was ludicrous. And now if it's under €5, I'm ecstatic about it. So I think it's every single thing, the perspective, the goalposts have totally changed. Your money has to work a lot harder and go a lot further. There isn't necessarily more of it, but it does have a much bigger job to do at any checkout that you've ever been at.
Right. Harry, it's actually a political issue. It's cut through to leaders' questions nearly every week at this stage. That sense of people's money being just not the same as it was.
Yeah, but it's happened with energy, with food prices, with dairy prices, with grocery prices, with everything. The interest rates went up, but they've come down a little. But the problem is that sometimes the inflation comes down, but unfortunately the prices do seem to stay the same. And even the 9% VAT rate in terms of hospitality, I wonder, has that had a knock-on effect for consumers yet? Are people seeing cheaper prices at hospitality outlets? No. I don't know. I don't think so far.
I don't think
we
were ever really promised that, to be honest. But okay, we'll get back on that because we have to take a break here and we'll be back with the weather.